Good morning, everybody. Welcome in. It is Thursday, October 14th. On today's show, President Biden addresses the supply chain issue. Is there really anything that a president of the United States can do?
Also, we've got a new report out this morning about predatory student loan lenders that prey upon the poor and middle-class families.
Yeah, it's troubling. And canceling Halloween? Yep. Some woke school districts think the holiday could be racist. So no more trick-or-treating, no more school parades.
That's not exactly what they said, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
All right.
Let's get uncomfortable this morning. Morning Invest starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I am Natalie Morris.
And I'm Clayton Morris.
And we're here to bring you the day's news on this Thursday, October 14th. We have a small caveat. Today was teacher conference day, so our children were home. We don't know whether or not they'll break into the studio. We locked them out. We put a troll at the door.
Yeah, we told them no, please do not come up into the studio and occupy yourselves.
Hopefully that works. We may have a guest appearance from the children of this couple.
I know. We were talking before the show started. You know, it seems like the school year has started and they've already had like so many in-service days.
Yeah.
You know, like to check their progress. And like, you know, it's 3 weeks of school. Like, we want to give you an update kind of on how the kids are doing and how they're... It's like,
this could have been an email. Like, they were in school, but thanks.
Or let's wait till February when we've got enough information.
No, you want to be able to course correct and support your children. They were super helpful.
Is 3 weeks enough?
And Clayton's always like, let's go. I'm like, I do have a question. And Clayton's kicking me under the table. Like, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, like, have any questions? I'm like, no, wrap it up. It's like, actually, I do have a question about, I want to know about the homework workload. And I'm like, oh.
Last week we had open house, which also was virtual. And the teacher's like, okay, is there any questions? And I'm kicking Clayton. I'm like, just help her out. Ask a question. She looks so uncomfortable.
And I'm like, do you like being a teacher?
You suck.
Like, what's it like being a teacher? Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm like the Hermione Granger in the front. I'm like,
yeah.
Yes. I have a question.
I noticed on page 42 of the work home work booklet that there's a typo. Is that supposed to be there? Anyway, we've got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to be talking about the supply crisis. We're going to talk about student loan debt, canceling Halloween, and also what's trending on the internet this morning. But first, let's start this morning with what's going on with the supply chain issue, because President Biden addressing the nation yesterday, talking about where we are with the supply chain issue. And I think he was trying to make the case, I think, that, look, we've been working on this for a long time.
I think he has.
And maybe that's the case. And right. I think there's been we don't have to think that. There's been an executive order that he signed back in February around supply chain issues. And then it was followed up by another executive order in the middle of the summer, which enabled him to appoint a supply chain sort of czar. So there have been things he's been doing throughout the spring and into summer. But my question really is, what can a president of the United States really do? Here's what the president said yesterday in addressing some of those issues in front of the American people about opening some of these ports. Let's listen.
Adams. Los Angeles and Long Beach are home to two of the largest ports in America. And together, these ports are among the largest in the world. And the best way to make that point is that 40% of shipping containers that we import into this country come through these two ports. And today we have some good news. They're going to help speed up the delivery of goods all across America. After weeks of negotiation and working with my team and with the major union retailers and freight movers, the Port of Los Angeles announced today that it's going to begin operating 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This follows the Port of Long Beach's commitment to 24/7 that it announced just weeks ago. 24/7 system, what most of the leading countries in the world already operate on now, except us, until now. This is the first key step toward moving our entire freight, transportation, and logistical supply chain nationwide to a 24/7 system.
Most of this work was dealing with labor unions. Now, he's positioned himself as somebody who likes labor unions. He thinks he can work well with labor unions. So this was his solution, was to go in and say, look, can we lift some of these controls that are keeping these ports not running 24 hours, not allowing certain people to work overtime? We need this. We need to open up around the clock. Can this happen? And the labor unions agreed. Now right. He's saying he also got commitments from Walmart, Target, FedEx, Home Depot, UPS, that they will work harder. And he's calling upon the private sector and saying, hey, you should do this too, to which the private sector is saying, we're trying. We've right. been trying. We're trying to do this. We can't hire. That's sort of the one piece. Like, the president cannot poof create labor out right. of thin air, right?
Right. I mean, he can make some executive orders. He can try to open things up. He can try to make it a little bit easier so that these businesses can do their jobs more quickly. But, you know, again, it comes down to the labor issue. It comes down to the supply, right? It's a supply crisis. It comes down to these items which have been stuck in other countries, backlogged because of the pandemic, unable to get here, the cost of everything going up. This is not really his fault. I mean, this is not like this is the President of the United States' fault.
No, it's a perfect storm of all of these things. There are sicknesses in Asia in the factories in which they're produced. So the items are being produced slower, right? They can't leave because they can't cross a hurricane or a typhoon or whatever it is. When they arrive, there's a labor shortage to unload it. So there wasn't much talk about setting expectations for consumers and the fact that prices are going to be higher, and they will remain so, right? But I think there is sort of a small shift in the conversation around the fact that we acknowledge life is more expensive, goods are now costing arguably what they should cost, right? The sort of perverted low cost of items is no more. Things are going to remain this. I mean, he's celebrating this opening up of ports for 40% of all imports. What about the other 60%, right? There still will be clogs.
Well, and the other problem is that people are hoarding again, right? They're going to the Costco, they're buying up toilet paper, they're buying up as much stuff as they can get their hands on right now because they're worried about getting food for their family. They're buying up canned goods and other things like that. I'm curious, how many people in our chat right now, how many people who are watching, you know, are worried, number one, about getting those Christmas gifts? Also, have you gone to the store and have loaded up on anything extra? Let me know in the chat, like, have you doubled up on toilet paper or bought some extra beans or rice? We have a rice shortage.
Yeah.
There's a beans shortage. And then it's weird because then you have things like in Australia, we wrote about in the newsletter today, there's an avocado
surplus
because people were at home and they weren't going out for their avocado toast at the restaurant, so no one bought avocados, and now they have a surplus of avocados.
I don't understand this. It's all I eat. It's avocado toast.
So like every morning she's like, you want an avocado toast?
You cannot make it at home? Why were the avocados not consumed from people just doing it at home? This blows my mind.
You need to eat more avocados, apparently. That's just...
Apparently. Well,
I'll eat them all up.
Another shortage that I was on, it was a bit on NPR earlier this week. Another shortage is actually glass jars, that people are having trouble getting glass jars, which is going to start affecting things like vinegar, hot sauce, spaghetti sauce, things like that. And it's not...
Oh,
it's
don't
not
say a, that about hot sauce. Oh, not to her.
That was the specific... Why? Or the guy they were interviewing... was that's what he did, was vinegar and hot sauce. It's just because the glass jars are stuck in ports.
Interesting.
Jen Psaki, White House press secretary, yesterday was asked about this issue. And I actually thought, I tried to get it for you and I couldn't, the file size was screwed up. But she was asked by a reporter and kind of pushed on this issue, you know, if President Biden is working so hard right now to fix this infrastructure issue, why is the president not pushing harder to bring up the infrastructure bill for a vote and get it through? And she didn't have a good answer on this. She's like, we're working on this. And this has been one of my criticisms of President Biden. Where's the leadership on infrastructure?
But what are we talking about specifically?
I'm talking about
what type of
rail
infrastructure?
Well, first of all,
this?
Let's just talk about one. Let me just give you one anecdote. Chicago, right? Chicago rail lines right now are absolutely backed up with miles and miles and miles of trains that are sitting there with goods that are going to go bad, right? If we actually had a rail infrastructure in the United States, which is part of this infrastructure bill that worked and made sense, then we wouldn't have these backlogs. And the same thing is true of the ports. So port access, all of those things at the ports, at the train stations across the United States. So that's just one big issue, and specifically on labor too, like working with the labor leaders as part of this infrastructure package. So there's a whole host of things they could have done.
Okay. All right.
I'm just saying what I'm just telling you what a reporter asked, and the White House didn't really have a good answer for. I thought it was a good question from the reporter saying, "Hey, where has the president been on this issue of pushing harder to get this infrastructure bill through?" That's been one of my big criticisms of him through the summer. It's like we haven't heard anything from the White
House. That's not true. He's been on a tour. He's trying to like promote.
He's out there trying to promote it. I'm saying,
push it through Congress. I think because the point of failure is too risky. Like if you push it through, it's voted down. You don't. You know, there's only so many times. And we still have the debt ceiling to deal with. So it's a matter of priorities.
Here's another issue, though. President Biden is asking the oil and gas industry right now to try to tame some of these prices. This in Politico this morning.
Oh, look at that. $4.57.
That's crazy. What about gas prices are in your town? Let me know when you're in the chat. What are you guys paying for gas right now?
Strange things afoot at the Circle K.
Belinda Edwards says she has
That's a Bill and Ted's reference right there.
I have avocado waiting for my breakfast, Belinda says.
That a girl.
So the White House has been consulting with oil industry leaders to seek a remedy for the rising gasoline prices. Surging inflation threatens to tarnish the economic recovery. It's a seven-year high right now. Seven-year high. Up to $80 a barrel.
Meanwhile, in the UK, politicians are saying, look, we're going to start paying the price of things now. Like, our binge on cheap goods is over. It's been a good run, but that's it. In fact, the leading manufacturer of chicken has said, look, our 20-year binge on low-cost chicken, it's over. That's it. We're not doing
it
anymore.
In the
UK, right. And this is the way of the world, right? Cheaply produced masked goods is not a sustainable economy, and we're going to see that now.
And they're going to have it tough because, I mean, think about all the imports that they rely on. But they're already, the UK is already under intense pressure because of Brexit. So they're already, because of leaving the European Union, already having to deal with more pain in that way. And now on top of that, add in this additional supply chain issue.
No more cheap chicken. It's clucking terrible.
Derek Ead says $3.39 for gas where he is, $4 for Florence Vincent.
Wow.
Nicholas Camarel in $3.80 in Chicago. Nicholas, I'm curious up there in Chicago, are you seeing this train issue in some of the train yards there? $3.09 in Minneapolis from David Foley. Cindy Girl says $3.49 here in York, Pennsylvania.
See, but the chat room's going crazy about avocados. They'll take the cheap avocados in exchange. So if Australia can find a way to...
Yeah, get your avocados.
Get them on over here. We want them.
Yeah. So we have more news to get to.
Out of avocados?
What's that?
Let's work on making fuel out of avocados.
There you go.
I suppose we could.
That'd be a smart move. Like in Back to the Future when he puts all this...
Oh, in the flux capacitor that it runs on compost. That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So someone in the chat asking, are we going to talk about, we're going to talk about the COLA increase. That's right, the cost of living increase for Social Security. We'll talk about that in a hot second. But first, I want to tell you about our show sponsor today, our friends at Athletic Greens, which is part of our daily routine now. I've made it part of Natalie's routine. I literally started making one for her every day, and then she's been asking me for them every day. She's like, can you go get a shake?
It's like a fun afternoon cocktail for me. I do not add any liquor to it, but it just feels like an afternoon treat.
Yeah. It's so good, Athletic Greens. Over 75 vitamins in one scoop. And so instead of having to have like a huge medicine cabinet filled with different pills
supplements
and everything, that's one of the reasons I love it. I don't have to take all these different pills. One scoop and it tastes delicious. It gives me energy. It's super simple and it tastes really good. But by the way, don't take my word for it. So my mom, who's watching right now, okay, Verna, she's in the chat. She texted me the other day. She says, hey, this better be good. She said, I just subscribed to Athletic Greens because I need that pick-me-up in the morning. I need those vitamins. She said, I hope it's good. And so she just got her first shipment of Athletic Greens in just this week.
Yeah.
And she sent us a video. So here, everyone, meet my mom trying Athletic Greens. Watch this.
Hi, everyone. I'm Verna Morris. I'm Clayton's mom. And I just ordered my first order of athletic greens. And I put it in my canister. You want to see? It's all here in the canister that then needs to be refrigerated, I'm told. And I have my first bottle. I'm going to, I put a scoop in and mixed it up with water. And I'm going to drink it actually on my commute into work this morning. We have a sip here. I've already had one sip and it's absolutely delicious. I put some ice in mine and they say to have it before breakfast to give you an extra boost for the day. So I'm hoping I have an absolutely wonderful day with my athletic greens and hope you all have a great day.
See, she's a natural. So she tried it. Yeah, so she tried it. She's in the chat right now. And Kate T says, Clayton, you look like your mom.
Yes, he does.
I do. Yeah. So one tasty scoop of AG1 contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients. Throw it into the water, 12 ounces of water, shake it up, and you're good to go. By the way, right now they're giving away a free one-year supply of vitamin D drops that they ship with it, plus the free travel packs as well. With your first purchase, if you visit athleticgreens.com/invest today, again, simply visit athleticgreens.com/invest to take control of your health and give their new AG1 a try. Thanks, Mom. It's delicious. Thanks to Athletic Greens for supporting the show. All right.
Okay, let's now turn to student debt because new research shows just how predatory the student debt industry, the student lending industry really is.
Right. This is really awful. This is a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning. They did a pretty big report about just how bad the student loan crisis is in the United States. I mean, we've been talking about for quite a while here on the show how bad it is for students just across the board to be saddled with this kind of student loan debt. But now, according to this Wall Street Journal piece, we're learning that these lenders are specifically targeting low income and low middle class individuals for these loans. And they know they're never going to be able to pay them back.
That's right. Some of these terrible statistics from these Parent Plus loans, which are very high interest loans that go after people specifically with lower income. That is it just at Baylor alone or
no.
This is all over.
They really focused on Baylor.
Oh, no, that can't be. Yes. $103.6 billion in outstanding loans.
That's amazing.
The high interest outstanding loans of Baylor alone, right? Baylor in the last couple of years has tried to position itself as like an Ivy League school in Texas. And by doing that, they raise their prices. They try to get more income per student. 47% had children receiving federal loans for low-income students. And when they were asked, do you take the family's finances into account when you admit these students? And they said, no, we don't, actually. And so, okay, is it fair, right? So if I'm a low-income family and I have this dream that my child will go to a prestigious university.
But that's what they're preying on.
Absolutely. But is it the school's responsibility to say, your low income, you will never pay this off based on your finances. We can't admit your child, right? When the idea of it as a parent where you're like, please just let me, like, I'll live with this debt until I die. I have this dream for my kid. Is it the responsibility of the university? I don't know. Is it the responsibility of the debt servicer? Absolutely it is. You cannot qualify for debt you can't afford when it comes to a house or a car. Why should someone qualify for a debt product?
Well, it's a great question. That's a great question because you have to be able to prove that you can pay it back.
Yes.
In the same way of, you know, you're getting a house, right? You have to be able to prove that you can pay off the loan.
Right.
That you're going to pay this back. So, I think it comes down to the lenders. I mean, quite honestly, why does it come down to the university?
Right. And why is there federal regulation that's so strict to make sure that we don't have another housing crisis that means that home lenders cannot, they could never offer a debt product like this. Basically, you will never pay it off, but that's okay.
But this is because these big banks run Washington. These big banks and these corporations, they run Washington. So, of course, there's not going to be any regulation of this predatory
lending. But then why is there regulation of home and auto loans? If these big banks are running Washington.
There is and there isn't now. It's incredibly, there's a lot of concern about the auto industry because all of these zero interest loans, there was a lot of fear before in 2008 that the next shoe to drop was going to be all of these repos for these car loans because everyone could get them for like 0% down.
Yeah.
And there was, it was even worse than the housing market in terms of who could qualify in 2008. And if you'll notice, of course, after 2008, 2009, we had the Dodd-Frank Act. We had a number of things that tried to stop these lenders from taking advantage of people and from people getting loans for, they didn't have a job. How are you going to get a house payment if you don't have a job, right? So right. There was a lot of things put in place. But guess what? Under Trump and under Obama and now even under Biden, a lot of these regulations have almost been totally erased. On the mortgage side.
Right. We were reporting on Monday even that right. Now, or no, that was yesterday. The story we did about friend real estate purchases.
Oh, yeah. So teaming up with your friend to get a home.
That now you can put between only 5 and 10% down in order to get a loan. Right. These are some of the sort of irresponsible things that imploded an entire economy. So it's crazy. And, you know, there's no regulation on how much they can charge you.
Right.
For a loan product. If you really are learning to evaluate debt as just a bank product, right? I want a car. I want a house. Mm-hmm. I want whatever it is. I want a personal line of credit. You just evaluate what you're going to pay for money. That's it, right? These are the worst products on the market. The worst. And a lot of times when you go to apply for something like this, they decide what the interest rate will be based on your family's income, which is crazy, right? Like, we're going to decide what we can charge you, and then you
yeah,
decide.
It's like, to me, it's kind of like, you know, payday loans or that kind of stuff. It keeps people in a perpetual
right.
cycle of poverty. And so as this highlights here, I have highlighted it here on the screen, Trinia Saverin, who's a 53-year-old public school administrator in Texas, she owes $231,000 in federal student loans, of which at least $65,000 in Parent PLUS loans came from sending her daughter to Baylor, at least $74,000 in PLUS loans for her son's college costs, and loans for her own 2015 master's degree.
Oh, it's just
she says,
tragic.
I'll never get it all paid off.
Because this is somebody who dared to dream. That these degrees would put their family in a position to pay them off. And it clearly didn't, right?
No,
None of them are making this to pay it off in a single year.
And good for the Wall Street Journal. They've been covering these stories. This was a few months ago. We covered it here on the show, the story about the financially hobbled for life, these master's degrees that people get, that they'll never, like when you go to Columbia or some of these other elite universities, you'll never be able to pay them off. Recent film graduates of Columbia University who took out federal student loans have a median debt of $181,000.
Yeah.
How are you ever going to pay that off? Yet 2 years after earning their master's degree, half of the borrowers were making less than $30,000 a year.
But it's hard to say to someone, hey, your dream is to go get a master's degree for this, but that's never going to pay off, so don't do it, right?
Is it, though, or is it tough love? Because we've talked about, I mean, one of the reasons we moved out of that area, out of that situation, is it so that our kids could have access to a great education and not be saddled with intense student loan debt.
But when you live in America and these are your options, right, it's hard to say to someone, hey, go to a more economical college. There are other ways. Like, we just don't think like that. We get into this mental trap of, I need this prestigious degree to get me into this job. It's just so hard to say to someone, that degree will not pay off. Don't do it.
Yeah, is there, I mean, I'm sure you've studied this in your time getting your master's degree, but is there a correlation between someone who goes to Baylor getting a better job, higher paying job than a person just going to a community college?
In academics, there definitely is.
Well, in academics, which is a whole world unto itself, but getting like an accounting degree, you know, getting an accounting degree from a community college or a university that's not Baylor, or getting an accounting degree from Baylor, like, are you going to be able to still become an accountant? If you didn't go to Baylor, you know?
I don't know enough about like hiring practices of accountants, but you know, they're...
I'm just using that as an example.
Right.
Anyway, Richard Wolff, who's one of the... I love this guy. He's an amazing economist. And he just did a special report on this last night on why the United States and the UK are the two worst places in the world to get a higher education. Listen to Richard Wolff on this issue.
And so in the United States, students who still decide to go have to rack up debt. And I wanted to give you an idea, in case you're wondering. Yeah, debt per student is higher in the United Kingdom and the United States than anywhere else. They're not even close. And here's the number to keep in your mind for the United States. In 2016, there were 171 million adults in the United States. That's people who aren't kids anymore, but are 60 years of age or younger. That's what we mean by the adult population, right? 44 million had student debt out of the 171.
My God.
That's one in four adults has student debt. And here are the averages in 2016. We're 5 years later now. All these numbers would have to be adjusted. In 2016, the average debt, $37,000. And it was costing the average graduate $400 a month to service the debt. The smartest people in many ways, the ones with the best chance to get an education, borrow money, go to school, and are left with tens of thousands of dollars paying $400 a month in order simply to service the debt.
It just doesn't have to be that way. The rest of the world is not like this.
Right. I mean, he started that piece off by talking about, he said, let me give you eight European countries where it costs $0 to get a college degree. Zero. Zero, or he said, or as close to zero, maybe just a few hundred dollars per semester. And he ran down the list from Hungary to the Netherlands, to Denmark, to, you know, to Finland, to Sweden, to Norway, like the whole list where these kids are not saddled with student loan debt.
Comparable good education. I mean, there is no such thing as a doctor with a large debt in Europe.
Right. Or a lawyer, or anything like that.
So absolutely, it doesn't have to be like this.
Really troubling.
I just recently saw a comparison where it was looking at how many weeks of full-time work at minimum wage it took in the early 70s to pay for your college tuition, and it was like 14 weeks. So you could do it in a summer vacation. Currently, it would take 56 weeks, which means you couldn't pay off a year's tuition because there aren't enough weeks to work. That was if you were working full-time. You still couldn't pay off a year's worth of tuition.
That is awful.
Wow. And that doesn't account for the fact that the average worker works from January to May for the government. The government takes, basically in tax money, all of the money you make from January to May. And then whatever you make from June to December is what you keep, what you take home. So if you include that, you know, pre-tax or post-tax payment, then you're right. You absolutely can't. You have to live longer.
Cindy Girl has some good comments in the chat here. She says, you know, but whenever it's suggested that our government help out in student loan debt in our country, the forbidden socialism word gets brought up. Yeah, is Norway a socialist country? No, it's not. It's a market economy. It's not socialist. Is Finland socialist? No, it's not. Is Hungary? No, it's not. Yet they take care of their people, and they have health care, and they have education. And, you know, these lenders in the United States, these banks in the United States, run the show.
Yeah.
They absolutely run the show. So really, really troubling. Hopefully we'll have some, maybe President Biden with the executive pen could do a reversal of the student loan debt, but there's been no movement on that. And Elizabeth Warren has been calling for it. She's been asking the president to eliminate all student loan debt, and the president has been reluctant to do so.
Okay, so what can we do though? Like at this moment in time, you have a dream, your child is going to Baylor or Harvard or what have you. Mm-hmm. It's your responsibility to evaluate the debt product. Just see your student loan as a debt product. Should you take this on or shouldn't you? Most of them are pretty terrible.
Right.
That no family should take on this debt product. Are there comparable schools that cost less? Is there a way to get this education for something that will not put you into this financial situation, right? This is, again, something we talk about in the Financial Freedom Academy, is just learn to evaluate the playing field for your own self, because otherwise it's, you're buying into this belief, right? Like owning a home, expensive college, expensive car is what completes my American experience, right? But it also is what keeps you a slave to it. can you do it yourself, right?
And I think one of the key things is to consider the ROI, so the return on investment of this degree. I've been hitting this for the last 2 years on this show, which is, do you understand the return on the investment of becoming an art student, right? And I use that as an example, and nothing against art, but, you know, is it worth you going into $70,000 in student loan debt to learn how to become an artist? Okay, then you have to map it out and figure out, well, okay, when I get out of college, how will then I be able to pay this back? What is the return on this investment? How many years will it take me to pay that back? And so if you become a teacher, you become a lawyer, you become a doctor, you know that 13 years of school to become a doctor or whatever it is, it's going to take you 7 years of working at a hospital making $350,000 a year in order for you to pay back the $400,000 loan. You need to reverse engineer these numbers. You can't just blindly go into it, right?
With it, just because your dream is the driving force and like, I'm going to do whatever it takes.
Right. I want to be an architect. Okay. That's 5 years of schooling. Well, how much can you make as an architect working for yourself or another firm? Well, I can make probably this much per year. Great. It'll take you 7 years then to pay off this in the United States of America. Like, you need to figure these numbers out, I think. Yeah. We've got more news to get to today. Let's talk about the cost of living increase in the United States. So many people have been asking about this, wanting to know, you know, where are we going to be with the, you know, with Social Security benefits, right? Social Security benefits have not been raised in quite a while, or they went up just a tiny bit a short time ago. But now we are seeing the highest increase in decades starting in January. 5.9% increase. In the cost of living increase, 5.9%, it's typically about 1% to 2%.
It's very rarely above 2%. So what is this? This is how much you get as a raise if you're somebody who lives on Social Security. If you are retired, you can collect your Social Security benefits. You can collect Social Security benefits based on a spouse. Or if you're disabled for some reason, you also can get your Social Security benefits early. But this number is based on the Consumer Price Index. And this is a recognition of the fact that the cost of living is much higher this year than it has been in previous years. It hasn't been since the 80s that we've got a number this high. In 1982, the adjustment was 7.4%. But this is a really high number. It's an acknowledgement from the government that, hey, everything costs more. You can't live on a fixed income if inflation is happening. That means you are getting a... what's the opposite of a raise? A deduction every month,
right?
A demotion, your ability to buy eggs is decreasing nominally every single day. And so the government is saying, we get it. We're going to give you this 5.9%. I would like to offer just this practical tip on how to make sure that you're going to get the most out of your Social Security, even if you are not retired. Most people don't understand that Social Security will give you your benefits as based on your earning lifestyle, your career as an earner, as a worker, right? And they'll give you that sort of an average. And you can monitor that as a worker right now. If you just make an account with ssa.gov, sign in and see what they're sort of estimating that you will get at full retirement. And so if you're the kind of person that does not report all of your income, you're really shooting yourself in the foot because say you're a hairdresser and you make $50,000 a year, but you only report 20, you're only ever going to get your retirement based on 20 rather than 50. So when you retire, you have really not done yourself any services. So you need to speak with your accountant about making sure that you report all of your income.
So what do you do when you get on this website? So this is ssa.gov.
Is it ssa.gov? And you just go to create an account, and then you log in, you authenticate you with your Social Security number, and it will tell you, it goes all the way back to teens, and it will say you made this much in your teens. In fact, I was looking at your statement recently. We're married, so it's okay for me to do that. If we were just coworkers, that would be right. A creepy thing
like,
to do.
What are you doing with my Social Security benefits?
And I saw that you worked at McDonald's when you were 16.
That's right.
And you made something like, I don't know, $11,000 in that year. That even sounds like a lot. Maybe it was like...
Well, I also was a lifeguard. So,
okay.
I think I worked
it
like
may
two...
Not
there's no
even
way
have
been. I made...
$11,000. It was like very nominal. Okay, that goes into his average, right? They're going to average your income for all of your working years, and you have to work for so long, get so many credits. It's usually 4 credits a year. And then they're going to pay you out based on how much you have paid taxes on as your income. So you need to be reporting this. You need to be watching it. Now, if you were to have got, you would have received an estimate of what you would get in your monthly payout. But that estimate should be in January 5.9% higher. So it's good. You don't have to be retired to be watching this. It's really good to keep an eye on
that. Yeah, I had no idea. When you told me about this, you know, and we went in and signed up and started going through the website, and it got to see like, wow, okay. And it really has a good track of everything, and it shows you your percentages. So yeah, guys, check this out. SocialSecurityAdministration.gov. If you haven't already signed up, go sign up with your account, set up an account, and you can track and see, you know, at what age you would want to be able to, you know, to take out benefits. And
what happens if you take them early versus if you wait for full retirement at 70. It's definitely just smart to be looking over these statements, even if, you know, we are still about 30 years from retirement. But I want to make sure that number is maximized when we get there. However, you know, however we plan for it, and it's good to plan for it now. I think most people who are in the middle of their career just don't really think about it.
Right.
And so I made it a point recently to educate myself in order to think about this. And so this totally makes sense to me, this cost of living increase, because this is the price of goods.
Yeah, so with the increase, the estimated average Social Security payment for a retired worker will be $1,657 a month next year. A typical couple's benefits would rise by $154 to $2,753 per month for a couple. So 5.9% boost. Now, of course, the real question will be, you know, how much are we paying for, or what is the inflation number going to look like? You know, that's the next.
Right. I mean, it's not going to be 5.9%. That's almost been in certain months, 5.9%. So, but I do think this is an important acknowledgement from the government that, like,
right,
you can't keep people, like, it's like keeping your hand on someone's head. Like, you can't eat, you know? Right.
Absolutely. So, all right. Thanks for that. So that is the Social Security update on cost of living increase. COLA. It's been supersized.
I've read a whole book about this, but I've never heard the acronym before. So
what's the name of the book, by the way? Do you know the name of the book? Yeah. So she'll very often, hey, she'll read like incredibly boring topics on specific things.
That
like
was
this.
Not boring, but okay.
Well, it started because my father passed away in January, and trying to help sort of figure out, like, for my mom, like, some of the benefits of, because he was a veteran, there's, you know, and trying to understand and navigate some of this stuff.
And I realized I know nothing about it.
Right.
And so I found a book that I did actually really like. It is called, let me look it up on my Kindle. Hold, please.
Looking at stuff right now.
I'm looking stuff up in real time. Okay. It's called Social Security, Medicare, and Government Pensions. Get the most out of your retirement and medical benefits. And it's by someone called Joseph Matthews. It seems like it's a super boring topic, but this guy did an incredible job of breaking down all the benefits that the government offers to you. And whether you're a veteran, whether you're just a working person, whether you're disabled, whether you're you never were a working person, but you were a stay-at-home spouse. There's a lot to learn, and I am grateful for it.
Yeah, get it on your Kindle. It's $14 instead of $26 in paperback.
Yeah.
If you want to read
and
that.
And save the planet a bit.
If you want to read that. Okay. I'm going to tell us about our friends over at Headspace.
I will do that. Headspace is a really awesome meditation app that will help you sort of control the noise in your head. We all have it. It's not just you. You are not crazy. When the stresses of the last year, it's more important than ever to really practice giving yourself some space, living a healthier lifestyle, and just not responding to every little thought that comes up in your head. I once read a book that said that, you know, the sort of the idea of like a crazy homeless person walking down the street and just screaming out things. That's what we are all like. We just don't say it. And we need the tools to help us to back up know what to respond to, respond a bit slower. And Headspace does exactly that. It offers guided meditations for whatever you feel you need, meditations to spark creativity, meditations to help you sleep, meditations to help you be a bit calmer, meditations to help you be more present in your practice. I particularly like the children's meditations, especially when the end of the summer and your kids are a little overexposed to each other. And they just react to everything that their siblings say.
Yeah, they love the meditations.
They
sit down for 10 minutes, five. They're short, you know, for the kids, but they'll, and our little five-year-old, she'll sit there and like she closes her eyes and listens to it. And it just calms them and it gets them in the right, you know.
Especially when it's like, he did that, he touched that, he said that. I'm like, you don't, just ignore her. I can't, right? And so I'm like, that's when we need the meditation.
Kids get so like, no, I can't.
Yeah, ignore that. Or she's singing that song. And I'm like, ignore it. I can't, right? Like, but that's, it's true. They are unable to filter out thoughts and reactions. Everybody, every mental space needs practice with that.
Yeah.
So head on over to headspace.com/invest. You'll find your own Headspace at headspace.com/invest. You get one free month of their entire meditation library. And I bet you you're going to be addicted to it. It's wonderful to have this at your disposal. And really, it's the best Headspace offer available. So go to headspace.com/invest today for you, your children, your grandchildren, your parents, whatever it is, you will find a lot more ease of life at Headspace.
Our thanks to Headspace. I'm calmer already just watching that. All right, let's talk about this canceling Halloween story. So take us out to Washington State. So Washington State elementary school there has decided to cancel the Halloween parade due to what they're calling racial insensitivity.
Yes, they're saying more students of color do not celebrate Halloween. They're saying that they have been considering this for years, and they feel like this is the year to finally pull the plug because students of color either do not celebrate the holiday or they cannot afford the costumes, and they think that it's finally time to pull it. Now, they're not saying they're canceling trick-or-treating in neighborhoods. They're saying they're canceling it in schools. They will instead do a fall-themed celebration that will celebrate the end of the harvest. So, obviously, some parents think, oh my gosh, you're taking away our culture. How dare you do this? We need Halloween. The children love it. I am one who feels like, hey, if we're realizing that this marginalizes people, it's not like a long-lost tradition from the beginning of time. In fact, Halloween is an adaptation of a Celtic holiday, a pagan holiday that celebrates the end of the harvest. That's it, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was like a party. Like, hey, we grew a lot this year. We worked the fields hard. We're going to have a party. We're going to dress in costumes to ward away any evil energies that come when the days get darker. But how many of us have actually worked the fields and need this party because we've been working so hard in farms, right? So the spirit of the energy of the holiday no longer exists as it is now. Now it's about like shipping plastic pumpkins from China. So I have no love lost for tradition for this, if that's what it's about.
I don't know. I mean, it's the thing. You just want to take away. At what point do we stop canceling everything,
though? Or at what point do we find an inclusive way to celebrate everything?
So we have a Jewish holiday at school. What if you're not Jewish, right? The kids get out in New Jersey. The kids get offered Jewish holiday. Are the non-Jewish kids supposed to demand that they go to school?
But there is a way to include non-Jewish kids in the spirit of something,
look,
right?
I am as progressive as they come, I think, right? I mean, I would say, and so I'm all for making sure that we're not practicing any kind of racism in the United States. But Halloween parade, where certain families. Their main motivator, let me just read what they said here so I'm being clear what they said here. There are numerous community and neighborhood events where students and families who wish to can celebrate Halloween. Historically, the pumpkin parade marginalizes students of color who do not celebrate the holiday. Specifically, these students have requested to be isolated on campus while the event took place. Now, is it because they don't celebrate it for religious reasons? Or is it really, is it because they can't afford it? Because what they're saying also is that it unfairly targets those people who simply can't afford to buy the costumes. Well, okay.
There are certain Christian groups who really find this very upsetting because of
Halloween,
because of its because of the sort of association with the occult.
When I lived
which
in
actually
Florida,
there was no association with the occult. It's a holiday to
celebrate
the earth, right, in its pagan rituals. But I was raised a Jehovah's Witness. I was not allowed to celebrate Halloween, so I was one of those kids who was isolated. I had to sit outside the classroom while everyone got into their, and it is very isolating. That is an awful experience, and I wish that on nobody. While all the kids, and then the next day, kids always had candy in their lunches. Like, what'd you get? Did you get this? Did you get that? Like, it feels awful. I'm speaking on behalf of those kids. When if it was instead a celebration of the harvest with pumpkin themed pumpkin JoJo's, I would have been able to participate, and
okay,
that would have been a better experience.
You're making a good point. You're right. I think okay. At the end of the day, it's not like the city is saying, hey, you can't go out and go trick or treating door to door, and you can't.
You absolutely can.
You can do whatever you want.
Right.
You don't. You can.
But in the school, does it need to be? Our kids went to a private school in New Jersey that did not celebrate Halloween. They did exactly this. They did the processional feast, which was a processional parade, where they celebrated the harvest. They did not wear costumes to school. They did no costume-themed Halloween anything. But instead, they celebrated the harvest in this really, like, it was a big-time thing.
What the school district is saying, it says, okay, costume parties may be uncomfortable for those students whose families are unable to afford a costume for them. And I totally appreciate that. I mean, that's a horrible feeling, right? To be left out of something because you can't afford it, okay? And the noises that resonate from such events make some children upset, according to the newsletter sent to parents. Okay. Instead of costume parties, students at the elementary school will partake in inclusive events such as thematic units of study about the fall and examining autumnal artwork.
Okay, I'm telling you right now, Jehovah's Witnesses kids can do that.
They can?
Yes. So, you know, like, think about the people who are not allowed to have those experiences and how awful it feels.
Yeah.
Think of 6-year-old Natalie and,
you know,
some
people are bringing up some great things here. When I was a kid, I made my own costumes a lot of times. I made, like Belinda says, the best costume I ever made was a homemade cheetah jumper.
I'm all for the homemade stuff. Yes. I think my kids like Halloween. I don't love sort of the modern adaptation of it where, like, there are costumes in July and Costco and it's, everything that becomes commercial is so far from its sort of native inception. But the kids love it. And I'm not one to say, like, oh, I don't like how it is in the commercial world, so we don't do it. I'm not that much of a hippie.
Cindy Girl says, but paying $50 for a costume to wear for one day is ludicrous. Yeah.
Okay, but my kids do wear it year-round. So.
Stephen Hall says, hell, just give them all a participation award.
Your daughter what?
When my daughter was in elementary school, they didn't allow kids to wear costumes to school. So it was for Halloween, they didn't do that.
But actually now where we live, they reuse the costumes for Carnival. And so you get a little bit more bang for your buck.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
I like this idea. Who was it? Doug S. says, just let the students make their own costumes and make it an art class project. I like that. Or I saw someone else say, make it about something they're currently studying. Like, make your costume about something you're currently studying.
I like it.
You know?
As long as it's not a reproductive unit. Know what I mean? No slutty nurse there, fifth grader.
No bra day yesterday. Reproduction today. So let us know what you think about this. Drop us a comment below, this canceling Halloween. I've come around on it. I think if they're going to focus on the study of fall and it's not about the consumerism and they're going to load all these kids up on sugar. By the way, but not to get all hippie and so forth, and we talk about health-related stuff here on the show, but overwhelmingly, all of these kids get sick the day after Halloween. Why do they? Because they just eat so much sugar and
they don't sleep.
And they don't sleep, and they've just lowered their body's immune system, and then they all get a cold.
Actually, yes, we had a friend who was an ER doctor and said that children's illness spikes on the weekend after Halloween because they have lowered their immune system with sugar and they don't sleep. And so they all get viruses. They all get sick right after. And dentists now are saying, let them binge on the sugar one night rather than eat it every night and rot your teeth slowly. Like, give them whatever and then take it away. So,
yeah. I don't know. She used to do this thing called the Switch Witch. So she, what was the thing you would offer the kids?
Like, do you want to go get a toy or something? If you hand in your candy, on
if
the
you give me
day.
All your candy, I'll go buy you. I'll buy you a video game. I don't know.
I don't know. I should just take it. I'm like.
You're cruel.
I didn't really do sweets
for my daughter when she was growing up, so it wasn't. So when she would go out on Halloween, that was the one night she could just eat as much candy as she wanted, and she would literally, like, even at like 5 or 6 years old, she'd lay everything out, pick like five of them that she wanted to try. She would take like a bite of each one, decide what she thought of it, wrap them back up, and that was it. Like it'd be like 5 or 6 pieces. And she wouldn't even eat the whole thing. She would just like sample it. And I just always thought that I was like, well, this kid, I don't know if I'm raising her right or wrong, but.
Yeah.
Janice Christy Hahn on Facebook says, because the reason we should end it, is get rid of it, is because it's Satan's holiday. That's not accurate, Janice. Right?
No, it's not. It's a pagan ritual.
It's a pagan, which is a derivation of Celtic.
Yes, it's to celebrate in its inception. But in some ways now, as it exists, it is Satan's holiday.
Oh, it's Satan, the commercial Satan. Right,
it's
the costume Satan. But in the original form, it was just a celebration of the harvest.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
From people that didn't have the concept of Satan, so.
Right. It had nothing to do with that. But, you know, people like to, create the boogeyman about this kind of stuff. Anyway.
Yes. All right. Let's move on to what's trending, shall we?
We shall.
Okay. This is the segment where we tell you what's cool because we're cool.
Are we?
No. But we look on the internet to see what's cool and then we bring it to you. Okay. You may have noticed that red flags are trending. Do you have this... this tweet from Dionne Warwick that I put it in late in our rundown. Red flags are trending because this is a new trend where people write about the things that are red flags in their lives, kind of like pet peeves. My favorite, yes, is this one from Dionne Warwick where she says it is a red flag for her if someone asks her,
how late did you add it?
Like just a few minutes before the show.
Oh.
Shall I wait just a second or shall I read it?
Yeah, I just got to grab it here. This one?
Okay, yes. It's a red flag from her if someone asks her if she knows
the way to San Jose.
She's like, girl, stop, because that is not an original thing. And she's over it. It's like Jennifer Grey saying, please stop telling me to not sit in a corner.
Right.
She's over that. It's not an original joke. Don't do that. Steve Harvey is trending because of this photo that he posted of himself. He thinks he looks good and Twitter does not think he looks good. They don't like his outfit. Maybe it's the leather pants and the high platform Doc Martens and the sort of evil magician. I don't know.
He looks like,
I think
actually,
it's fine.
He
I don't mind this outfit at all. But
I think he looks like he could be like a Bond villain or something.
Or a Marvel character.
Or like he's in, he looks like he should be in like the movie Despicable Me or something.
I suppose. I think he likes how he looks. It's not for us on Twitter to say he doesn't
look
good.
I'm a little bothered by the pretentious nature of tweeting a picture of myself saying how good I look.
He may be really proud of himself for getting
like,
into those
hey,
leather
everyone,
pants.
Hey, everyone, follow me on Twitter because this afternoon I may tweet a photo of myself showing you how good I think I look.
Come on, people do that all the time. That's the whole thing about Instagram.
Do I look good?
You literally just described social media.
Right. Why can't he? Yes. Jeremy says he looks like the Matrix. It totally does. He's pondering life's deep...
Right.
Quandaries.
But what's weird is he's leaning against a door that's opening. So he's like, okay, I'm...
He may be falling back soon.
Yeah, I don't know.
I like vanity shots. I think that's all right. That's
but
how he
leather
wants
pants?
To look.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it. If you follow this tweet on Twitter, all kinds of people are making fun of him and putting him in different, like, Marvel-looking situations.
Ross.
And
Kristen Swenson says Ross in
that's,
the leather
that
pants.
That was exactly what I thought. Ross in the leather pants. Okay, Katie Couric is trending because she admitted to editing an interview with former Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and removing comments about Colin Kaepernick and anthem kneelers. Now, in it, the justice is said to have said that people who kneel are showing contempt for a government that made a decent life possible. Couric said that she just wanted to protect the justice because she was elderly and she probably didn't understand the question. I think this is an extremely prejudiced thing to have done. Do we protect Donald Trump from himself in this way? And just say, oh, that was, he probably didn't mean that. He probably didn't understand it. I think probably the justice had thought through what she meant and that it was not for any media to cut it out because we wanted to make her look good.
Right. We're going to start picking and choosing. Like when we sit down, others have gotten in trouble for selectively editing interviews with President Biden.
Yeah.
Like, oh, he seems senile in this video, so we can't show the whole video. Or the newsroom or the news editors or the producers are like, yeah, that makes him look senile.
It's not for us to make anybody look anyway. It's just for us to say this is how she feels. Now, I am not comparing the intellect of Donald Trump to RBG.
No,
but
no.
I am just saying, like, there are certain people that we do not give that benefit of the doubt to, and it's not for us as media professionals to choose.
Right.
So I think generally the comments on Twitter is that she should not have done that, should not have admitted it.
I mean, think about if, like, when we got done with the show every day, when I was editing the little clips to put up, if I'm just like, you know what, I actually think Clayton feels better about it, you know, about this thing. So I'm just going to add some stuff. I'm just going to move some words around because I could do it.
Right.
And
you're going to deep fake it. And by the way, this deep fake stuff, you know, I mean, this isn't like a deep fake thing, but that's about to take over the internet. Like, we're pretty soon it's going to be very difficult for us to trust anything that we see from a video perspective.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this senator was caught on camera saying this. Like, really? Was he? Or was this some, you know, was this a deep fake that someone just manipulated the audio, you know?
Well, really, you don't even need to deep fake it. I mean, like, I could do probably a fairly credible job of making you say some things just by cutting things out, switching cameras, zooming in, making it look like it was all, you know, a congruous, like, flow. But I could take several clips from the same show, mix them around, and just make all kinds of nonsense.
Please don't.
That's like the bad lip reading YouTube channel, right?
Yeah.
That's the whole purpose of the bad lip reading YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You know? Like last night, my son was watching a song he's like, Daddy, watch this, a funny Donald Trump singing song. And it was just Donald Trump's voice being edited up to be like a rap song.
Yes, that was. He's like, isn't that funny? And we're like, uh-huh.
Like, it wasn't actually that funny, but anyway. What else is trending?
All right. Hashtag Lauren Boebert is so dumb is trending.
Ooh, that's definitely a hashtag I would like to read.
Hashtag Lauren Boebert is so dumb because of her response to the bow and arrow killing in Norway. Five people were killed when a man took to the streets to do a mass shooting with a bow and arrow. He is now in custody. But the politician posted this tweet saying, a man in Norway killed a bunch of people with a bow and arrow. Norway has some of the strictest gun laws around, yet mass killings still occur. Liberals need to understand it's not the gun, it's the criminal. This is obvious. It's so stupid that we don't even need to. I'm not gonna justify that.
Do it.
With a response. Nope, I'm not going to. Okay, moving on. Snapchat is trending because there's a short outage on Wednesday morning. It was nowhere near the Facebook outage level, and it's back up. So people were looking for that.
Do you have a Snapchat account, Philip?
I do. I've had it for years and years because my daughter, when she was younger, liked to use their filters for the like dog face and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got like, that's the only time it's ever been used. And so it's like I still have like maybe 1,000 videos of her just doing the same thing over and over with the little filters. So it's still there, but I don't think I've opened it in years.
Well, sad, it's still popular enough that people were noticing that it was out. So.
Yeah, Kristen says, does Snapchat exist still? I mean, I think Snapchat. I have no idea. Like, I don't use Snapchat, but I guess. I mean, it's a New York stock. I mean, it's traded on NASDAQ, right? I mean, Snap, right? It's huge. I guess it still has a huge following. I never hear about it. All I hear people talking about is TikTok these days.
But yeah, I mean, I see a lot of screenshots of it on Reddit. So, you know, like Reddit memes and stuff like that. So people are still using it. I don't know what they're doing with it.
But again, we're not cool, so we wouldn't know.
Right.
We only know when it's newsworthy. Okay, dope stick. Dope sick. I'm sorry. Dope sick is trending because of an upcoming Hulu series starring Michael Keaton. It launches next week, but it's supposed to be a huge bomb to the pharma industry because of intentional decisions. Do you know that?
No, that was Michael Keaton saying, I know. Because he's in this show.
Yes. It's supposedly a huge bomb to the pharma industry because of intentional decisions made by pharma executives.
What do you mean a bomb?
Like, it's an expose, but it's fiction. But it's loosely fictionalized based on basically how the opioid epidemic was intentionally created through the use and prescription of OxyContin. And it's actually, so I'm interested to watch this, and I watched the trailer.
I'll watch anything that Michael Keaton
and
does.
And I realized that it is based on a book by Beth Macy that was in 2018. So I decided that I'm going to read the book first because, but it is fiction based on real events. So
I like the phrase dope stick better. I do too.
Sorry.
Art talking about stimulus. You know, we've talked about the stimulus here, Art. There's, you know, we'll bring you updates on the stimulus if there is a stimulus. There is no stimulus, and they have no plan in the works right at the moment. They basically don't even have a top line number. There's nothing. So if there's a YouTube channel that only does stimulus news, there's nothing to tell you today. There's literally nothing, zero to tell you today. That's my little, sorry, I just had to respond to Art here. Anyway,
go ahead. All right. Finally, Robin Williams is trending because a video from actor Jamie Costa was posted in which he plays Williams. It's only a 5-minute film. The actor produced it himself and he nails it. The trailer has over 8,000 comments. How many views now do you see?
It's 3 million views.
3 million views. People are kind of freaking out about it, and I want to say that I am one of them. It does not appear to be for an upcoming project, so it's not a trailer for anything. It's just a little clip. And he's amazing. I want more. Some studio is going to pick this up post-haste.
Yeah, so look at it. So it's his own YouTube channel, Jamie Costa, right here. He created this, like, test footage scene of himself playing Robin Williams.
You have to hear it. Now, I don't know if we can play it for you.
Yeah, I'm worried because we'll get, like, a copyright takedown.
We will link you to it. We'll put it in the chat and then link it later. But it's fantastic. It's so crazy. I just don't know how anybody pulls that off.
That resemblance is just uncanny.
Just the costuming, yeah. And it's a scene in which he's joined by the actress that is playing Mindy from Mork and Mindy. I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. It says there somewhere, but it's wonderful. I watched Mork and Mindy with my parents when I was a kid.
Anyway, you got to hear his voice, and he's really amazing. So, Robin, test footage scene, you can find that on YouTube, on Jamie Costa's YouTube channel.
And just read the comments. People are losing their mind.
Yeah, everyone's like, this is fantastic. This is a fantastic impression. If there ever was a biopic, they'd better cast you. Speechless, his voice, his mannerisms, his expressions.
You know, my parents once went to a comedy club in the Bay Area where I'm from, and Robin Williams was there, and he got up and did some stand-up just because he happened to be there. So they went to not see Robin Williams and got to see him.
That's awesome.
Isn't that a crazy experience? Yeah.
That would be pretty darn cool.
You guys are super blurry right now. I'm not sure what happened to your internet.
Oh, yeah, look at that. We're not feeding much.
It's like you switched over to your 2006 Nokia or something.
Oh, no. Well, guess what? That was my last item for the day. So,
yeah, I just have to edit that part out, Philip.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'll find something to put in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you, everyone, for watching the show today. We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast. Be sure to sign up for our daily newsletter. Just go to morninginvest.com. Let me pull up here on the screen. Morninginvest.com. It's totally free. We provide a lot of value there for your morning, for you to just kick off your morning. So just come on over to morninginvest.com, put in your email address, and tomorrow morning you will receive our morning newsletter because it goes out around 6:30 in the morning, 7 a.m., somewhere in that time frame. So right over your cup of coffee, you'll be able to enjoy the newsletter where we cover about five or six different stories for your day, right?
Yep. We put a lot of thought and care in curating some stories that will help you be smarter, be a little bit more positive, start conversations with friends, hopefully thoughtful and respectful ones. So yeah, it's our baby.
It is.
Our pet project.
Yes. So please go check it out. Morninginvest.com to sign up. And don't forget to check out our sponsors today, Athletic Greens, as well as Headspace as well. Grover, was that Grover barking out there? He was out there. But then now he's laying back down.
He's supervising our children, making cookies. So we have to go check in on that, see if we still have.
Any children
or a kitchen.
Yeah.
So thank you for...
cookies.
Or any cookies. Thank you for sticking with us for the Parent-Teacher Conference Day. And tomorrow we will be here without children.
Peace out, everyone.
Knocking on wood.
Much love to all of you. Bye.
Bye then.